We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo-woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. Joining me, as always, still way over there and beautiful and sunny in Southern California, the one and only Dan Rubenstein. Sir, how you doing?
I'm probably as tan right now as I was when I came home from my honeymoon, Ty, which is to say, feeling pretty good. I'm using a lot of aloe vera because, you know, got to keep that skin looking great after getting so much sun. But Ty, I'm wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing well, Dan. I am doing well. It's good to be with you once more. Today, we are going to be going through the final chapter of our First Place Losers series that we've been running now for a couple episodes. We're doing 2015 through 2019.
Yeah, so the 2015 seasons through the 2019 season. So technically speaking, it's the 2016 College Football Playoff National Championship runner-up through the 2020 runner-up. Is my math correct?
Correct. I believe that's it.
Okay.
Whew. Thank you so much for downloading the show, for being part of the madness with us. Hope you are doing well. Hope you're washing your hands. Hope you haven't developed any kind of ominous cough or fever.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for downloading. Don't forget to go on out to Spotify or Apple or Google or really anywhere you get your podcasts and listen to the show. Subscribe to the show. Tell others about the show. You can also follow along. We've been doing a lot more on Instagram lately, thanks to your handiwork, Daniel.
Yeah, throw us a follow on the gram, Ty. We're churning out content. I'm waiting for you to follow the show here.
Hashtag I follow the show.
I know you do. I posted a picture of your hair. That's if that's not reason enough to follow us on Instagram, I don't know what we're even doing. There are constant updates on Ty's hair.
You hit it best like 2 weeks ago when you said that my hair was assuming a leadership position. I think that's...
It absolutely is.
I think that's where we're at with things. I saw some other folks talk about it looking like a helmet. It is kind of a helmet.
Yeah.
Where else can you find us? Twitter, Facebook.
YouTube.
YouTube. Also go on out to our website at solidverbal.com and subscribe to the newsletter. It's going to be the best way moving forward to stay in touch with what we're doing as a show.
Yeah, moving pieces, solidverbal.com, the newsletter, all those various places. We're just adding pieces of content, Ty, as we hopefully, I think we're about 100 days away from the alleged start to the 2020 season.
Yeah.
So we are ramping up as schools, and this is a nice little transition, hopefully.
This is a pro move right here.
Thank you very much. As schools themselves ramp up and we get some campus action, voluntary workouts, hopefully schools are taking all necessary steps to put athletes in the safest possible position as they return to campus. I saw Clemson is June 8th, the Pac-12 June 15th.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Daniel.
Okay. Sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself.
Surely you jest. We have breaking news.
Thank you. Yeah.
So let's start here at the top. I think the headliner for the moment, we can get into schools and conferences allowing athletes back on campuses or to take part in voluntary workouts. But the news is that this is normally the time when TV networks would reveal start times for the first 3 weeks of the season. Andy Staples, our friend from The Athletic, noted that, gasp, they're not doing that. They've elected not to. They're delaying that announcement. He goes into great detail about why you shouldn't read that much into it. I think the common sense angle is obviously, dude, we're in a pandemic. A lot remains to be seen. We should find out more in the coming days and weeks. But hold your horses for now. Just because you don't see those times out there doesn't mean there's not a season. It just means networks are trying to figure out how all of this pieces together.
Correct. Right. They don't want to start taking steps too quickly before knowing what states are doing, what schools are doing, what stadiums are doing. They're just sort of being as patient as possible, which I think is probably the best in terms of due diligence.
Now, on to more specifics. Clemson has announced that it's bringing back athletes on June the 8th. We have the Pac-12 jumping in and saying that they're going to allow players back for voluntary workouts as of June the 15th. And Oklahoma is going to let its players back on July the 1st. Interestingly enough, this may put Oklahoma about a month behind some other Power 5 programs who are allowing players on campus earlier for voluntary workouts.
Yeah, and it should be noted, Lincoln Riley has long been a proponent of let's wait as long as we possibly can to arm ourselves with the most possible information and safety precautions. And so he has been outspoken about that. And it's not necessarily putting them behind, I think, in any sort of extra meaningful way, more so that like people are getting back to campus to work out and condition. It's not school starting football practice. So Oklahoma players are able to go out on their own and condition wherever they may be, just not on campus. So yes, Oklahoma as a university, as an athletic department is saying, okay, let's take as much time as we can to figure out how we're doing this and what the world looks like. So I don't think Oklahoma players are going to be any further behind. And as it relates to the Pac-12, I believe word is that California is, as of the time we're recording this, close to reopening places like gyms. And that is something that Commissioner Larry Scott has pointed to as when that happens, that's a very good indicator about the direction we're going to go timing-wise. So things seem to be progressing in that direction in my home state and the state in which I'm recording this right now.
And I think that Pac-12 news bullet is very, very telling. If you are hopeful for a college football season, the Pac-12 was a conference I know you and I were watching very, very closely because California has taken aggressive measures. Oregon and Washington had entered at some point into a bit of a pact with California to kind of do a joint reopening and align some of their policies. And it seemed for a while as if they could be the fly in the ointment. You know, again, everyone's heart is in the right place here, but just how would that perhaps hamper plans to move forward with the college football season? Now, if we're at a point where they're comfortable on June the 15th bringing athletes back for voluntary workouts, I think that is a good sign just from a season standpoint. So more to follow.
Totally.
For sure on this front, we'll do our best to try and keep you abreast of the situation here. Each and every episode, we'll talk about news. But yeah, that is your update for the moment. Not a lot to discuss, but some meaningful college football news nonetheless.
Should also add, if you're not paying attention to Bud Elliott over at 24/7, our friend Bud, keeping track of the sheer number of verbal commitments happening.
Oh God, it's still gonna be a tidal wave of decommitments.
Yeah, and I saw Pat Fitzgerald, I believe, talk about that, but there's something like 800 verbal commitments, and last year at this time it was 350 or something, less than 50%. And so if you are at all a fan of recruiting of either your team or just in general, it's going to be an active, you know, based on whatever happens in the college football universe, it's going to be an active next few months, to say the least. So something to take note of.
So with all that stuff out of the way, Dan, let's talk about First Place Losers Part 3. So
yes,
we have spent parts 1 and 2 of this bit discussing all the runners up from 2005 through 2014.
Mm-hmm.
The game within the game for us has been comparing those teams to one another, and more specifically to 2005 USC. And
yeah,
just as like a thought experiment,
legendary loser.
Yeah, like that.
5 USC.
That part has been really hard for me. I think for us, uh-huh. I think we struggled with it. And I don't know if it's like how the music from high school and college sticks with you forever or what, but
mm-hmm.
like that USC team happened at such a formative time for us personally, for many of our Verballers out there listening. Where you stand on 05 USC to some degree says a lot about your fandom.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's why I've had a hard time with it. I don't know. Now, though, as we get into part three, I don't know if it's recency bias. I don't know what it is. But I feel like we're at a point where it's unavoidable. Like, nostalgia cannot possibly override the fact that at least three of the teams we're going to talk about here today were undeniably better. You could probably make the case for all five. But at a minimum, I think three are just undeniably better. There's simply no avoiding it.
We've also reached the point, and I'll go through some other context. We've reached the point where the quarterback position and offenses have evolved to such a crazy point. I don't know if you ever saw, you know, those moving graphs that update by the year. You're watching like, okay, which quarterback has the all-time best QB rating? And it starts in like 1955. And then you suddenly see it grow year after year. Okay, now Ty Detmer has the highest ever rating. Oh, wow. Now, okay, so-and-so does. And you look at the top of that, the efficiency marks of recent quarterbacks.
Yeah.
I feel as if the last 15 years since that USC win between Johnny Football, Marcus Mariota, Cam Newton, I'm leaving people out of this, but Jameis Winston, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, Joe Burrow, all these guys are playing, are leading offenses that are so electric and so ruthlessly efficient that it almost seems like we're talking about two eras ago, and even comparing eras is difficult. And now two generations, three generations removed, I understand where you're coming from. Because even 2017, Jake Fromm for Georgia is playing at a crazy high level, given that he's a true freshman. That it's just become such a wide open sport and so quarterback friendly that it almost becomes pretty impossible to compare with how great offenses have gotten.
So let's start here with 2015 Clemson. What's interesting about this show, and we had one with Oregon, where we had Oregon twice in one episode, and we're going to have it multiple times here with part three, because we've got Clemson twice, we've got Alabama twice, and we've got Georgia in the middle. Let's start mm-hmm. with 2015 Clemson. They finished the year 14-1, that one, of course, being a 45-40 loss in Glendale in the national championship game to the Alabama Crimson Tide. This is a very good team. Very good football team. Yeah. Obviously, they made it to the national championship. Two things jump out at me, though, when I go back and look at it. First, and this is also going to be a recurring theme, Dan.
Yeah.
My entire opinion of this Clemson team, I think, was shaped by them beating Notre Dame in a tropical storm first week of
monsoon,
October.
Monsoon, sir.
This was the monsoon game to start all monsoon games. Clemson, if I remember correctly, jumped out to an early lead. Notre Dame came back late. They had a real shot. I was at a wedding at the time. We got back mm-hmm. from the reception after multiple adult libations, and yeah. I was fired up in front of a different group of friends than the group that normally would watch me watch a Notre Dame football game, and it was jarring for them. It was jarring for them.
I imagine.
Clemson won 24-22. I never got over that game. I always felt like Notre Dame was good enough to win. And so I begrudgingly watched Clemson the rest of that 2015 campaign.
The strongest case for Clemson as a team that either, I'm not even thinking about 2005 USC, but just as it relates to the other four teams that we're going to talk about, because to me, it at first glance, it seems like they're the easy answer as for the worst of the five teams. By the numbers, they're sort of the worst. By the way they lost that national championship game, where they just lost every conceivable moment. And that includes every moment that they could have tackled OJ Howard and just didn't. But that, you know, with the two special teams play, giving up the touchdown and then giving up that the onside kick that they allowed Alabama to recover. But really, the case for this 2015 Clemson team as being worthy and or better than any of the other first place losers is the ACC was actually pretty good in 2015. Yes. They had to make their way through, and this is pre-Lamar Jackson Louisville, and they barely got by them. It's Kyle Bolin, I believe. They get by Notre Dame in a monsoon by two. Louisville was a three-point win. Georgia Tech is pretty good. Miami's pretty awful. This is the last year of Al Golden. They just completely obliterate the Canes. It's 58-0. But NC State is good, and they have a bit of a shootout against them. It's a total bloodbath against Florida State. They kind of look not great against Syracuse. That was a game late. It was a 4-8 Syracuse team, I believe. And they didn't look amazing in separating from South Carolina, a 3-9 South Carolina team, but a legit North Carolina team in the ACC championship game that they need an offside, onside. They were ruled out. North Carolina ruled offsides on an onside kick attempt at the end of the game. And then, of course, they beat a good Oklahoma team in the first round of the playoff by 20. So the case is that they had to weather a stronger schedule leading up to Alabama than perhaps they had to do in previous seasons.
Yeah.
And they did. They did. They didn't separate a lot, but they at least were a little bit more proven.
I think that's fair. The other thing that jumps out to me, just looking up and down this roster, this is a great team.
Mm-hmm.
It's still not as great as what the team would become over the next couple years. Not even close. There's just such a difference between being great and now as they are going into next season as they were this past season, cartoonishly loaded, which is how I would classify it. That's sort of where we're at now. All that said, they had 14 guys from this starting roster that got picked in the NFL draft. This was the Deshaun Watson show on offense. He threw for 35 touchdowns, over 4,100 yards. He rushed for another 1,100 yards on the ground. He had Wayne Gallman going over 1,500 yards. He had Artavis Scott as his leading receiver, a young Deion Kane, a young Hunter Renfrow. He had Jordan Leggett, Sherrone Peak, also on this team out wide. Defensively, very stout. You want to talk about recurring themes. That's been a staple of this run by Clemson. A crazy pass rush with Kevin Dodd and Shaq Lawson up front. Both of them had 12 and a half sacks, which is crazy. They were just living in opposing backfields. They eventually make it to this national championship game after rolling their way through their semifinal playoff matchup. And that squares them off against the Alabama Crimson Tide. Again, this is a wild game, a fun game. 45-40 was your final, with Alabama grabbing a lead in the second quarter, sort of holding serve for the duration of the game before they eventually got more breathing room on a long touchdown reception by OJ Howard, followed by a kick return by Kenyon Drake. That sprung them, gave them enough breathing room, I think, to kind of take this one through to completion.
Yeah, Jake Coker lit them up. Jake Coker was fantastic. Derrick Henry has a couple long runs he finishes. I mean, his average on the ground wasn't great, but he wins moments. And you mentioned O.J. Howard. We both did. And just every conceivable moment Clemson could have lost. Deshaun Watson throws a bad pick to, I think it was Eddie Jackson. And Clemson just had opportunities. Alabama scores 24 points in the fourth quarter to come back and win this game, a back-and-forth game late. So Clemson just not fully ready for prime time to compete with Bama for 60 minutes. So still a really, really strong Clemson team. Not the strongest Clemson team, maybe even not even a top two Clemson team of this era, but nonetheless, a wildly successful season.
The other thing here, if I could get vulgar for a second, if that's okay.
Ty, let's do it. Come on.
The playoff games were on New Year's Eve. And this is when they tried to spin that bullshit about starting a new tradition. Remember, they had this song by Jimmy Kimmel.
This New Year's Eve will be.
Remember this
so
thing?
Awesome.
Of course I do.
And it was fun.
So
it was a fun song. I appreciate that song. But it was bullshit too. And in the end, we all tried to move our plans around to watch and be part of the playoff. And Clemson won by 20 over Oklahoma. And Alabama shut out Michigan State. And it was all for naught. It was like not that exciting. Anyway, where does 2015 Clemson stand to you versus other teams that we're going to talk about? Well, I guess we could talk about where they rank relative to the other teams in a little bit. But where do they rank relative to 05 USC?
Two teams who struggled with big moments on the big stage. I'm probably going to go USC here, but not by much, not by much. This was 2015, I believe, was also the first year of Clemson with the offensive coordinator duo. So
yes, right.
They were still getting used to that. Was it Tony Elliott and Jeff Scott? But yeah, I'm going USC by a hair here.
All right. 2016 then kind of is a natural segue because 2016's mm-hmm. Alabama, it was a rematch between Clemson and Alabama. This time, Deshaun Watson got the better of the Crimson Tide. They win 35-31. This game was played in Tampa. Yet another year of semifinal games on New Year's Eve. Another year of blowouts. We move our plans around. Washington and Ohio State get drilled, setting up this rematch in the title game. Mm-hmm. And just sticking with Clemson for a second, they only had, I have only in air quotes, only 11 guys drafted from this Clemson starting lineup. But I thought they were better. They were just better.
Yes.
On both they offense were. And defense. Statistically, that bears itself out. And the big statistical shift, if you go back and look at it, Dan, was Clemson not being as reliant on Deshaun Watson's legs.
Right.
He had 500 fewer rushing yards this season, but mm-hmm. the legs were there in the big games. If you go back, if you plot out
yes.
his rushing attempts, it was the bigger, closer games where Deshaun just decided, like, screw it, I'm taking over.
20-plus carries against Bama in a winning effort this year in the national championship game.
The other thing here of note, it was a much more battle-tested Clemson team. Way more close games. 7 one-score games. Even had that weird loss at home against Pitt in the
weird.
Second week of November.
Some people say incredible.
Well, it was incredible, but it was just a weird spot for them to lose.
Losing to Nate Peterman has not aged well. not aged well for Clemson.
On the Alabama side of things, Dan, we had Jalen Hurts.
Yes.
As a true freshman, right? He won the starting job.
Yeah, so he comes in, he relieves Blake Barnett against USC and Jerry World in week one in just an absolute blowout over the Trojans. Certainly USC becomes a different team with Sam Darnold a couple games later, and they end up winning the Rose Bowl. So I guess in retrospect, that kind of reflects well on Alabama, but different quarterback, first game of the year, whatever. Alabama still, whew, that was not a pretty day for the Trojans. They survive Ole Miss week three in a game. I distinctly remember what Nick Saban looked like and sounded like after they survived the shootout against Ole Miss. I think it's in Oxford, 48-43. He looks like the weight of the world has just drained his body. He looks so relieved that he was just rescued off of a sinking ship at the very last moment. But they shut out LSU. They obliterate Mississippi State. They drop 50 on Florida in the SEC championship game. And they make efficient work, I would say, of Washington, holding down the Husky offense to 7 points in the semifinal. And that was, it's a Jake Brown. It was a very good Washington team, obviously, that makes the playoff. But it's an injured Jake Browning team not really able to get anything going on offense. So ultimately, just a hell of a year for Alabama. But going against that Clemson team, Jalen Hurts is not able to do basically anything down the field with his arm. It's okay. They kind of get it done with his legs. But in terms of what the Alabama offensive murder machine would become, they weren't there on offense. They just weren't. It was, I think it was Bo Scarborough running things, taking over for Derrick Henry. He would have some amazing individual moments and runs, but the offense was still a tick or two behind what it would become under Mike Locksley and Josh Gattis.
The defense, though, was loaded.
Ooh, the defense was good.
The defense was loaded. So this was a very talented Bama team. Say what you want about the offense and how it was constructed. In many ways, this was a seminal moment for that Alabama offense. This was Kiffin. This was Steve Sarkisian taking the offense in a direction that it hadn't been before, but frankly has been ever since. Jalen Hurts ran for almost 1,000 yards, which was a far cry from what we saw back in the days of Greg McElroy and A.J. McCarron with the prototypical dropback guy, Jalen Hurts.
Right, the Jim McElwain offenses. Yeah,
Jalen Hurts, excuse me, was certainly a different kind of quarterback than we had seen at Bama. And they found a way to use that to great effect. Overall, this was a Bama team that had 19 of its 22 starters drafted into the league, which is great.
yeah.
Everyone on the defense got drafted with the exception of one defensive back.
Okay.
And like you said, they pretty much rolled everybody. They had that Ole Miss shootout, which got a little crazy. But the level of talent on this defense was preposterous. I think you sent it over before. The defense was low. Everything here was just preposterous on the defensive side of the ball. In this game, they jump out to a 14-point lead. Clemson just nibbles. He nibbled their way back in. The fourth quarter was nuts. Clemson outscores Bama 21-7, including a 2-yard touchdown pass to Hunter Renfrow with 1 second left, which gave Clemson the win, gave Deshaun Watson that signature victory. Jalen Hurts did have trouble against this Clemson defense, but this was still a team that I look back, I say they're better than 05 USC. Just they had the defense. They had so much talent on offense. Maybe it wasn't quite ramped up to where it eventually would go, but the level of talent to me was just so superior on this team that I got to give them the nod.
Yeah, I'm going to agree. And especially with what, if we're going to specifically compare against the USC defense of 2005, the best of Jalen Hurts in 2016 is using his legs. And so he would have been able to move the ball that way against SC. And I think you're right. I mean, it's a tough comparison with this team against the other four teams we're talking about. I still have them against ahead of 2015 Clemson, even though I would happily take Deshaun Watson over Jalen Hurts running my potential national championship team. The defense is just that stupid in 2016. So it's what? Reuben Foster, Ronnie Harrison, Jonathan Allen up front, both Minkah Fitzpatrick and Marlon Humphrey, Anthony Averett, Dalvin Tomlinson, Sean Dion Hamilton. It's annoying that a player like, I think Daron Payne was a rotation guy on this team, Eddie Jackson in the back end, Deshaun Hand's a rotation guy. So when something is to that extreme, I'm just going to give them the nod. So yeah, a really impressive year. And this was also the year, if you remember, Lane Kiffin is sort of asked to leave.
Yes.
After the Washington semi, as he takes the FAU job, and it becomes sort of a distraction. And so Sark takes over. He has one game to call in the national championship game. Wasn't particularly a pretty day for Alabama's offense, but that's kind of one hand behind your back. So excusable on some level, but not on the winning level. Clemson takes it 35-31 and wins every moment, including that Hunter Renfrow winning catch at the very end, which if your team wins on a pick play, it's part of football. If your team loses on a pick play, it's a dastardly penalty, and that's how it ended.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
All right, so moving on then to 2017, this show is nothing if not smoothly transitioning from one season to the next. And that's because all the same teams are involved like every year.
Yeah, correct.
Bama gets back to this title game, this time though squaring off against a common SEC foe. They're up against Georgia. Now, Georgia had a very interesting year. I mentioned at the top with 2015 Clemson, how their win over Notre Dame kind of shaded my view of them. 2017 Georgia falls into the same category. This time, it was stuck in my craw all year because I legit felt like Notre Dame should have won that game. Second game of the
year.
Had
a shot.
To provide context, second game of the year, Jake Fromm makes his first start on the road. Jake Eason got hurt, and Fromm steps in, goes to South Bend, does just enough to win, doesn't turn the ball over. You know how we talk about Alabama and how they took Jalen Hurts and they found a way to open things up and change the offense forevermore? The exact opposite happened, really, with Jake Fromm in Georgia. And certainly in year one, he was more of that prototypical drop back, dare I say, game manager style. They ran the ball a lot this year. Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, DeAndre Swift. That triumph.
Yeah, as well they should have, by the way, with those
three.
Oh,
yeah, and their line. I mean, they're very, very good and stout up front. But collectively, those three guys rushed 460 times for almost 3,200 yards and 34 touchdowns. Like, there was no debate over what the strength of this offense was, right?
Right. Totally.
This is a team that lost on the road, believe it or not, at Auburn by a 40-17 score in mid-November. They eventually do work their way into the college football playoff. In that playoff game, they need double overtime to knock off Oklahoma. Great game, 54-48. And then they went to overtime again. This time they lose 26-23 to the Alabama Crimson Tide. This one was in Atlanta. We actually did interviews on Facebook.
Yeah, I remember McCall Hardeman being very nice.
Very nice. This game, this loss for Georgia was notable because this was the Tua game, right? This is where Tua cemented his legacy in college football.
Yeah, Tua comes in at halftime after Jalen Hurts is ineffective in the first half. I don't believe they get on the board, right? Alabama in the first half of this game.
No.
And so Tua comes in and throws some good, throws some bad, and then throws some all-time excellence in the game-winning throw to Devontae Smith. So some context about this season. I think you covered a lot of it. Yes, true freshman in Jake Fromm stepping in, the fact that they're able to get to the national championship game, the fact that they're able to win a double overtime game against Baker Mayfield in Oklahoma with that true freshman in that duel, that's just crazy impressive. Should say, it's the first team we've discussed of these first three that has not only lost a regular season game, 2015 Clemson, 26 Alabama, both go undefeated during the regular season, they get shellacked by Auburn.
Yeah.
This is the best Auburn defense of the modern era, the 2017 Auburn defense, yes. And the great news for Georgia, though, is in the case to get into the national championship game, I suppose into the playoff, they have a second chance at Auburn in the SEC championship game, who had just dispatched Jalen Hurts in Alabama in the SEC championship, in the Iron Bowl, 26-13, 14, something like that. And so Georgia does have that opportunity to say, we have dramatically improved or gotten our act together since, I think it was week 9 or 10, against Auburn on the road, on a neutral site. They comfortably beat Auburn, and then they get to Alabama in the national championship game and play an incredible first half defensively against Jalen Hurts, really demoralize the entire Alabama team with how well they have played on defense. And ultimately, can't beat Alabama's backup, who we now know is amazing. But if there's something working against Georgia in the case for the best of these five teams or beating 2005 USC, it is that against a cold quarterback who does have experience playing in this offense in blowouts over the course of this season, they eventually lose to a cold backup quarterback. So the case is that they're a complete team, loaded at running back and defense, so talented, like I mentioned. But there are a couple things holding me back, and it is that blowout loss to Auburn.
Yeah.
And it is the fact that a backup quarterback can come in and weather an incredible, I think it's Mel Tucker coordinating this defense, and just lose the big moment at the end.
The interesting thing about this team is, you know, backup quarterback, he comes in, he's able to lead the offense, had a really good campaign as a true freshman. No doubt about it.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Was able to utilize that rushing attack and win some games ugly, but very effectively nonetheless. They obviously make it to the national championship game. They had a very good chance of winning this game. They scored first in overtime. If it's not for that Tua pass, maybe they win.
Mm-hmm.
Very good season. But you look at this roster, and you think to yourself, this was a team that was led by defense, right? This is a defensive team.
Yeah, this is Roquan Smith, DeAndre Walker, Lorenzo Carter, Jonathan Ledbetter. I mean, they're talented on all three levels. These are NFL players.
Only two guys got drafted into the league on that defense. Roquan Smith and DeAndre Baker. Nine of their starters were drafted from offense. Believe it or not. Didn't get much acclaim.
You're talking about the following season or overall?
I'm just talking overall in general.
Okay. Okay.
So a pretty good collection of talent on offense, whether they got drafted in the, you know, a draft immediately following the national championship or at some point later in their careers.
Yeah. DeAndre Walker was drafted, to be clear.
Anyway, with regard to this game, the Tua game, Georgia led 13-0 at half. As you said, they shut out Alabama first half. They lead 20-7 midway through the third quarter. And then Tua sort of takes over in the second half. He's out there, just immediately takes the reins, takes charge. Throws three touchdowns for Bama in one half of work. He throws one inside 4 minutes to tie it up. He has to weather the storm as Georgia gets the ball first in OT and kicks a field goal. They're down 23-20. And then, of course, that perfect 41-yard strike to Devontae Smith to give Bama the walk-off win to, again, cement his own legacy as part of college football lore. He's obviously gone on to great things in college football and in his time at Alabama. A heartbreaking loss for the Georgia Bulldogs, to say the least. To get this close, for what it's worth, it's not like this loss knocked Georgia off its trajectory. They're still in a very, very good spot. They're going to have some turnover at quarterback, and we can obviously talk about that as we get more into previews, but the team and the program are still in a very good spot. They were just so close here. This is such a stomach punch if you were a Georgia Bulldogs fan.
I would argue Jake Fromm never really was the same, that he kind of regressed, and that's a coordinator thing. It's a talent thing. And it's not as if, and these were good wide receivers, they didn't have a killer at receiver this year. It's what, Javon Wims, Terry Godwin, Mecole Hardman hadn't fully come into his own in 2017. So they were led ground game wise on offense. They just, I don't think they had the complete look of a consistent downfield attack, if that's what they needed. Now, obviously, they score 52 in double overtime against Oklahoma, so they can keep up with the best offensively. It's not an actual big picture issue, but if you're comparing them against previous years and previous downfield attacks, receiving corps, quarterbacks, whatever, maybe if we're in the margins here, that's where you can knock Georgia a little bit.
All right. So where do they stand? Where do they stand if we're doing the comparison, not just to 05 USC, but 2016 Alabama?
Bama. And So I have in my rankings of these five teams, right now it's sort of in order. I have the bottom, number five, 2015 Clemson, number four, 2016 Alabama, and then number three, I have 2017 Georgia. So I actually have it in sort of, I guess, chronological or reverse chronological order thus far.
Yeah. I think I agree with that.
I hate the blowout loss. I really do. If we're nitpicking, the blowout loss to Auburn, I think they even were favorites against Jarrett Stidham and the Tigers. And that, I mean, that plays perfectly into my, you know, always take home dogs with good defenses and tough places to play. Man. And that worked out.
I think without the loss and maybe with more of a passing component, I'm inclined to go Georgia over that 05 USC. But I don't think the final version of that team, very, very good. Don't get me wrong. I don't think I can make that case. Not to you, not to myself, that they're better than 05 USC.
Yeah. I go back and forth, but yeah, I think it's a good game.
Final two now. 2018, again, is Alabama. Alabama loses 44-16 to Clemson. This is the game they played in Santa Clara. This was an awesome team. This was a death machine that we talked about all year. They killed almost everyone they played. They were number one from the start of the year all the way through until they lost that title game to Clemson. Tua threw 43 touchdowns to just 6 interceptions. He didn't run much. He didn't have to. They were trying to keep him upright.
Murder machine.
He did run into a buzzsaw that was Clemson and Trevor Lawrence. in that title game. But I know just from looking at your rankings that you've got 2018 Alabama as not just the top team of these five, but maybe just like the top team in general of all the teams that we've discussed.
Well, so it brings up an interesting question. What do we consider 2018 Alabama to be? Are they the 29-0 team over LSU in Baton Rouge with a largely healthy Tua and defense? Or are they beat up Tua? He gets beat up in the, I guess it's Georgia in the SEC championship game. Beats is good enough to beat Oklahoma, but certainly doesn't look like himself because he's playing an all-time great Clemson team in the national championship. But if we are saying in a vacuum, big picture, are we saying these teams at full health?
I think we should.
Okay. Just making sure.
Yeah,
because
I'm
not saying it's an excuse, but I want, if I'm comparing 2018 Bama against all the other teams and against USC, I'm going to take that tact. You can adjust accordingly if you're listening to this or if you are Ty Hildenbrandt and also listening to this. I have 2018 Alabama on top. And it's that murder machine thing. It's that incredible offense. It's a defense that, while not 2011 or even, 2016 amazing, is still great, is still capital E elite. And I still feel like, even with the result, the best of Alabama is probably neck and neck, and not losing was 44-16 against Clemson.
Yeah.
They're not, this is all hypothetical because we actually know what happened when the two played. And that was Alabama wasn't able to take advantage of scoring opportunities because Clemson's defense was incredible. And Trevor Lawrence was able to complete pinpoint passes over and over again to Justin Ross and T. Higgins in Alabama, with a linebacking core that's beat up, with a secondary that's not where it had been and not where it should be, was unable to get in front of Trevor Lawrence passes. So I still think the best of this Alabama team, which is Tua healthy, not as good as 2018 Clemson, but better than 2016 Bama, 2015 Clemson, 2017 Georgia. A fully realized Tua murder machine.
Tua murder machine.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. When they really open up the RPO game, when they really are just, it's there. This is a bottom line team. And I don't mean bottom line, they're great. I mean the literal ESPN bottom line, where they are 47 seconds into a game and they're up 21-0. That sort of murder machine where you're like, somebody screwed up in Bristol in typing in the data and typing in the score or whatever. Some sort of feed is off. Turns out, not so much. That's when you have murder machine status, just like LSU had this past season.
Do you find yourself bored? Bored at how good some of these teams were? And perhaps how it...
Please explain.
Well, how it shaded you as just a fan. There is sort of this feeling of inevitability,
right,
with regard to both Alabama and Clemson. We're going to talk about Clemson again.
Mm-hmm. Of course,
2019
we are.
Season, right? Of course we are.
This is all Bama Clemson with one Georgia. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and this is not just me saying it. We've had people write in. We've read it on Twitter. We've heard other people talk about it, how the sheer dominance by these two schools have really affected how we feel as fans. That notion that it's already somewhat decided, even mm-hmm. as we start week one of the season. We perhaps come at it from a little bit of a different angle, being so we cover everything and we try to have fun with it. But I can imagine if you're not in our shoes, if you're watching just from your own team's perspective, maybe you're a Mississippi State fan or an Ole Miss fan, and knowing that you've got these juggernauts in the right. South, in your own conference, it makes it an interesting proposition, doesn't it?
I think so. But at the same time, if we're looking back and we're looking at the roster and we're looking at what we now know about Tua, what we now know about Jerry Jeudy, Henry Ruggs, Jalen Waddle, O.J. Howard's gone by then, Devontae Smith we had seen at this point, and then a running back core of, I believe it's Damian Harris, Josh Jacobs, and Najee Harris, Harris Ranch, as we like to call it.
Sure.
It's what it should have been. They basically hit their expectation ceiling. Or maybe they surpassed reasonable expectations given what we had seen from Nick Saban and Alabama offenses in years past. But we now know that this all makes sense. There are some teams where you look back and you say, how did this team lead the nation in offensive efficiency or whatever? And you're like, okay, they had this single great player or whatever. It would have been very difficult. And so you can look at those Oklahoma teams with Lincoln Riley, whatever. But it would have been very difficult looking back at this Alabama team and saying they're not all that dominant. So in terms of boredom, yes, because I like watching games that are back and forth to some level and that are interesting in the middle of the third quarter or even the middle of the second quarter. But at the same time, this Alabama team lost when they were on the biggest possible stage. Yeah. That counts. I mean, that's at least something. And not only did they lose, and not the case against this Alabama team, is that they got embarrassed. In their biggest possible game, they got embarrassed. They need Jalen Hurts to pull out the SEC championship game against Georgia. Oklahoma, they're able to hold them down in the beginning, and the Sooners, you know, come back with Kyler Murray impressively, but don't really have a full chance in the opening round of the college football playoff. But to shut out LSU, to shut out a ranked Mississippi State team, to just completely lay waste and embarrass everybody else they play. I'm bored by it, but I don't have to rewatch and live it right now, so I can just sit back and be impressed. And that's fine. I'm okay with it.
I put 2018 Alabama at the top of this list.
Same. We agree.
At the top of this list. Not just on this episode, the whole thing.
Yeah, we're going into obviously 2019 Clemson next because that's all that's left. But a difference to me between two teams that just get run out of the stadium on the national championship stage, Alabama in 2018. Here's a full list of their close calls.
Yeah.
Georgia in the SEC championship game. That's it. And that's the number four team in the country. They score 50 against Auburn. And then as we mentioned, I think it's a combined 50 plus to nothing against Mississippi State and LSU in consecutive weeks. And that's in Baton Rouge. So in terms of close calls during the actual regular season, it doesn't exist. Clemson in 2019 has the North Carolina game.
Yeah.
And they have an ACC that is pretty putrid. So that's the lean to me of two teams that got run out of the stadium on the biggest stage. I'm going with that Alabama offense at full health.
That leads us to our final team here.
Yeah. Can I back up real quick? How did Clemson get to, I mean, they win the national championship it's the 2018 season. Who do they beat to get to Alabama in the national championship game?
Oh, God.
So Clemson takes down Notre Dame.
30-3.
There are no losers. But if you didn't score double-digit points in a playoff game, Washington, Notre Dame, Michigan State, I think during this time, you're getting a little bit closer.
Mm.
Sorry, continue.
Moving on.
Sorry, I didn't want... I know people were thinking it, and they were like, will they, won't they? It's sort of a Ross Rachel Notre Dame situation. I just wanted to make sure they will.
2019 Clemson.
Mm-hmm.
Killed pretty much everyone. But
yes.
North Carolina and Ohio State, I guess, in the semifinal.
Correct.
Everyone else, they destroyed. Mm-hmm. They finally make it to the national championship game. Hopefully everyone remembers the national championship game. Only happened a few months ago. They lose 42-25. They run into a buzzsaw. The buzzsaw is Joe Burrow. The buzzsaw is that electric LSU offense. I don't know if anybody beats them.
It's not even a murder machine. It's a murder cloud.
Ridiculous.
They have so much control. Yeah.
Ridiculous. Yeah. Even if you thought there was a chance Clemson could lose that game to LSU, nobody thought they'd give up 42 points. It was a really good defense.
It
speaks volumes about how good LSU's offense was, that they were able to just straight up outscore Clemson the way they did. Killed him.
Yeah.
Absolutely killed him.
Arguably the best defense in the country, Clemson.
Yeah, I think I could make the case that Clemson, for all its glory, was still underappreciated because of how they rolled through a bad ACC.
Yeah.
We didn't get full credit for that.
Well, we've talked about this during the season to that point. When was Clemson must watch TV during the regular season?
Exactly.
For the first quarter against random 5-7 teams, there was not much. Everybody gather round. We think this might be the week that Clemson really gets a challenge. That just didn't exist.
We never really even took it seriously that they might lose.
No.
That's why That's why that UNC game was such a pleasant surprise. I'm not rooting against Clemson, but just from a TV product standpoint.
Yeah, yeah, drama.
To have competition and drama in a Clemson game, that was new news, right?
It's great, absolutely.
But they roll through the ACC, which was down. Let's be honest, it was down. They make it all the way through to that title game, and they run into this buzzsaw. They'll go down in history as losing by 17 points, but this is still just a really good team. Really good team, really good quarterback, great talent, up and down the roster, good, solid defense. They're, to me, second behind 2018 Alabama. If we're ranking these teams, they're definitely in front of 05 USC.
A couple things, Ty. I think you're correct with everything. Should also point out that Ohio State was also a team that scored fewer than double digits because they lost 31-0 to Clemson on December 31st, 2016.
Right.
So I didn't want to have an omission there of all those of that roundup of the non-double digit. Second of all, you're absolutely right. I have Clemson behind the 2019 Clemson behind 2018 Alabama in terms of these five teams, but I think they beat USC just because they're a more complete team and Trevor Lawrence offers something dynamic that would be hard for any team at any point in history to handle. I'm also going to hear that, and we'll hear or whatever, some reaction like, well, they call that a fumble. Ohio State's the national championship game and they're built to better take down LSU perhaps. No. I'm going to say no on that because Ohio State had opportunities. Ohio State had opportunities against Clemson. They go up 16-0, and their next four drives, three of which they go three and out. All four they punt, and then the fifth they throw an interception. They have an opportunity at the end of the game, and they throw an interception. Right. So we're not talking about a back and forth. We're not talking about fully maximizing potential on offense against a Clemson team, never really going through stretches of struggle. We are talking about an Ohio State team that made a ton of mistakes. And if Clemson is a team that wins by the narrowest of margins, able to beat them on an interception to seal things at the very end of the game, and then get run out of the stadium by the LSU murder cloud, I'm not believing in Ohio State being better suited to compete with the cloud. I'm just not there. So with that out of the way, the 2019 Clemson team, once they got North Carolina and that scare and allowing North Carolina to milk the clock and sit on the ball, once they got that out of their system and they get that last second 2-point conversion stop to beat the Tar Heels, they were incredible.
Yeah.
And Travis Etienne is one of the joys that I've personally had watching him since the onset of our show in 2008, since we started this program. Watching Travis Etienne in the open field with, you know, running the score up to such a crazy degree that he's just not playing fourth quarters, that he is making legitimately fast players look slow in his wake. He is one of the joys. And obviously the emergence of Clemson as wide receiver U with all these guys they put into the league, with Trevor Lawrence coming in as the most heralded quarterback of whatever we can remember as a recruit and surpassing those expectations. It's been just an amazing watch for me. So I have them nipping on the heels of 2018 Alabama, but still, if we're on the margins, that's where I'm reserving my judgment.
This is just such a really good team.
They're so good. I mean, it's impossible to parse. It really is impossible.
It's so hard. And I sat down in the laboratory shortly before hitting record, trying to suss out where I came down on 2019 Clemson. And part of this is made harder by the fact that it's just so recent. I don't have the benefit of looking back 5 years in that perspective, comparing them to teams that came after. And so, you know, maybe with some age, they will grow even fonder in my mind. But at least as it stands now, part of me can't believe they lost. I still can't believe that they lost. I can believe the kind of season Joe Burrow had and that instant transformation that we saw at LSU. That will go down in college football history as perhaps the greatest season of all time from an offensive standpoint. But this is still such a dominant Clemson squad. The fact that they lost in the manner that they did, it highlights how good LSU was, and it still seems a little surreal to me.
Yeah, a lot of the cases here are 2015, Clemson wasn't fully there. They lose to an Alabama team with Heisman Trophy winner, with just a ton of talent. And even like the 2016 Alabama team is great. And in many years, they're winning the national championship and they run into a once in a lifetime 2016 Deshaun Watson led Clemson team. And then Georgia, that in a lot of years, they're good enough to win the national championship. They run into a once in a lifetime backup quarterback star and lose on a once in a lifetime, maybe the best and most dramatically successful pass of all time. That, I mean, just we're talking about thin margins. We're like, these teams are good enough in most years to hold up the whatever the college football trophy is called, the Hancock trophy. I don't know what it's called. And then Clemson, just with how complete they are on both sides of the ball, replacing what they did on the defensive line from 2018 to 2019 and not missing a beat at all. In fact, with Isaiah Simmons becoming even more creative with how they move players around their defense, and they run into the best college football offense of all time.
Yeah.
The best.
Yeah.
And so there's just a certain degree of, and it's not even losing moments. Sometimes it is. It's just plain old dumb luck. That's all it is.
No.
Jamar Chase, 221 yards, wins the Biletnikoff out of nowhere. Out of friggin' nowhere. Joe Burrow has an encouraging season in 2018, and then in 2019, just obliterates everything. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, oh, he's a nice back, turns into, what are we supposed to do with this guy? What the hell are we supposed to do with Clyde?
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's just bad friggin' luck.
Bad friggin' luck. All right, let's rank these out here and call it a day. I've got, I think, the same ranking as you. 2018 Alabama, 2019 Clemson, 2017 Georgia, 2016 Alabama, and 2015 Clemson.
Yeah, that's what I have. And I think there's a good case for each of these teams. I'm going to go with Georgia having the worst case as for beating 2005 USC, but still a pretty damn good case.
Yeah. All right. Well, that does it for our first place losers bit here. Three parts. Go back and listen to the first two if you haven't already. You can go on out to our website at solidverbal.com and find all of our old stuff, all of our old episodes if you want to listen back. Don't forget to subscribe and listen and follow along on Spotify, on Apple, on Google, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find the show. Also, sign up for our newsletter at solidverbal.com and follow along on Instagram, on Twitter, and on Facebook. And I forgot to mention that we've got a teeming subreddit at solidverbal.reddit.com, a passionate community of some of our most favorite verballers talking about each and every episode. Long after the final bell here, after we hit the stop button, the conversation rages on. So we appreciate their support. We do try to drop in from time to time to check out the conversations that are going on over there. But if you like the show as much as we do, as much as they do, go on out to solidverbal.reddit.com, the sub that is commandeered by our good friend Peter.
Yeah, and I think moving forward, we're going to be doing more Q&As, and that is going to be if it's not the main, it will be a main repository that you can drop questions even when we're not saying, hey, ask us any question about X, Y, or Z. You can just start dropping questions into a thread we'll start on the subreddit that we can go check on and sort of cherry pick which ones we like best. And it's a good way to get your question answered on our upcoming Q&A shows that we're ramping up.
This is true. Okay. Well, Daniel, this has been fun. Thanks for hanging with me. Thank you to everyone out there for hanging with us as we go through all these great seasons in college football. Some more disappointing than others, but fun nonetheless to walk back through 15 years of college football runners up. A lot of fun. For that guy over there, my good friend, Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrand. Thanks again, everyone. Stay solid, stay safe, wash your hands, and we'll catch you all in a week.
Peace.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.